Totally opinionated. We do it for the culture. A group of minds can make. Yo, welcome to the Top Podcast. Special edition of the panel, episode 4. I'm your host with the most, IV, aka Sweet Brother Noomsy. Please say the Noomsy. You know I got the gang with me.
What's good, Josh? Your girl Crown Vic.
Year, what it do, baby? It's your boy, Mr. Durag himself, Just Doug, in the building.
Hey, fam, it's Love, J Meeks.
What's up with it? It's your boy, D. Carry, aka Carry These Nuts, aka I'm dope as fuck. What's up?
We are truly opinionated people, the Top Podcast. Thanks for tuning in. Like I said, this is episode 4 of the panel interviews, and we have two special guests with us today. One is my ace. She goes by the name of Jameika Allen. Let's clap it up for her. And we have another special guest here, Mr. Keon Hill. Thank you for joining us, brother. So this episode of the panel is a special episode, y'all. We're highlighting the topic mental wellness. We're going to be discussing a lot of different aspects when it comes to mental health and the stigma in the Black community. But I thought it would be important to have Ms. Allen here and Mr. Hill join us. So I appreciate y'all again. Jameika, first and foremost, what's your title? What do you do?
I am a licensed, qualified mental health professional with a master's in psychology.
Okay. Okay. A QMHS.
QMHP.
Oh, excuse me.
A, right.
We here to be educated.
Right. A for adults and C for kids. I work with both.
You work for, okay. Mm-hmm. Have you been working with one more longer than the other? Or
No, they're equally the same.
Okay.
For about 4 years.
Okay. And what does your job entail? What do you do on a day-to-day?
So the purpose of my job, okay, so for kids, I work with kids with different behavioral issues. So it could range from them having ADHD, some kids, you know, sexual assault victims. I have kids that have PTSD, anxiety. So with the kids, my goal and my job and my role is to teach them coping skills and different techniques that they can use on a daily basis so that they can help to deal with whatever issues they may be having. So, for example, I've had a family in the past who dealt with something tragic. The father shot the mother, the kid saw. So that was the whole, you know, issue with the PTSD, having a lot of anxieties, bad dreams. You know, it varies. And with adults, the goal is to help adults who have been diagnosed with depression, anxiety, schizophrenia, bipolar disorder, PTSD, you name it, to help them become independent individuals within the community. Because our goal is not to be around forever. Like, we shouldn't be, you know, there. We're there to support these individuals, but then at the same time, we have to be able to back away and allow these individuals to be independent on their own and know the steps and the things that they're supposed to do on a daily basis in order to cope and maintain, just like a regular human that doesn't have a mental illness. Because, I mean, at the end of the day, a mental illness is something that everybody, you know, that has it has to really deal with. It's a brain disorder. It's not something that you can just turn on and off, you know. So that's pretty much my role.
And how long have you been in this field?
4 years.
4 years. So initially, what attracted you to getting into the field overall in the position that you have now?
Well, I started with teaching, and I liked being able to see my students kind of change. So from going from point A to point B by the end of the year, just seeing that whole transition and that growth. So then, you know, I've always been a people person. So being able to work with individuals, whatever their circumstances may be, and to help them grow into a better individual, you know, however I can support that person is what my goal and my role is. And that's what I, you know, I just enjoy just seeing that change, just seeing somebody go from, you know, maybe having panic attacks on a daily basis to being able to deal with their panic attacks and understanding their triggers and understanding what they need to do in order to combat those different feelings, to just being able to say, hey, you know, I don't need you anymore. Because, I mean, ultimately, my goal is to say bye. You know, I develop relationships with plenty of people.
Get them to the point where they can be self-sufficient.
Right.
Gotcha. Yeah. I understand that. Keon, you are Jameika's client. Correct?
Yes, sir.
Yes, we can take Mike.
Yes, sir.
How long have y'all had a, well, when did Jameika come into your life, and just describe her relationship to you? What does she mean to you? How does she help you out?
She came into my life like maybe almost 2 years ago. I was going through a whole lot of different things inside of my life with my housing, my behavior, and I just really didn't care about with whatever it was. It's whatever it was, and mm-hmm. it led me to incarceration several times. Led me to a long, long incarceration before, you know, because I rebelled because of the simple fact that I was a rape victim when I was young. And, you know, that really took my self-esteem, you know, and it shook me up and it let me know that now where I'm at in life, that it's all right to be a man.
Right.
It's all right to be a man, you know? Mm-hmm. And she really helped me through a lot of things as far as with my son, stabilizing, and most of all, she encouraged me. You know, that was the most important thing. Like,
yeah,
somebody believed in you.
Somebody believed in me. Somebody showed me love. You know, when she helped me move into the residence that I'm at right now, and you know, it's beautiful because when I first got there, it was two birds there, and it's amazing how a bird
to the mic.
It's amazing how a bird could actually maneuver and have to depend on a human if they're not free.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So that responsibility showed me that if a bird can still sing and be happy with no food when everybody else let them loose,
yeah.
it showed me that you can do all things,
yeah.
you know. And one of the birds passed away, so I took it and put it and buried it by my window, you know, because a person have to realize, like, this illness is real serious, and even with looking at the news and seeing everything that goes on and all, I talked to Jameika, and I have a problem with it. Mm. I have a problem with what I see with Donald Trump. I have a problem with, because if it was one of us as a person with a mental illness, I suffer because I know it's wrong and I'm trying to do what's right. So
it's like a conflict there.
You know?
Yeah.
And I talked to her and she encouraged me and let me know that I need to make sure I take my medications, which is very important to a person, because medication actually helps.
Yeah,
if you allow it. I wasn't taking my medication when she met me in a hotel room through another one of her friends that she worked with, and mm-hmm. you know, I met her through incarceration. You know, I did a long time inside of incarceration, maybe 10 years.
Okay,
you know, and that was because of my behavior from the beginning when I was like 13 years old. I was abducted for 2 weeks and I was sexually assaulted. So I had to really register by her help and showing me other people through the avenues that I've made that I can do it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And what is the illness that you do suffer from? Or
I suffer from bipolar disorder, post-traumatic stress disorder, major depression disorder, and the bipolar is 1 and 2. So, mm-hmm. you know, at first it was kind of embarrassing to talk about it, but, you know, everybody suffer with some type of
Definitely. Definitely.
Depression, but the support system is more important. When you have somebody that actually care and you not just out of your mouth.
Right.
When you speaking out your mouth, I care, I love, I this. She didn't do that. She just did. She just came and did because she said, look, I know I believe in you. And I had to believe in myself. I didn't have no self. I had low self-esteem, no confidence in myself. And now I look at myself a year and a half later, I could say that the elements of the universe have been great to me. It could be great to me. And I'm just thankful for, you know, I'm even thankful for this opportunity right here just to be able to speak and let people know that, you know, no matter what your illness is, no matter what position that you're in, always believe in something other than you. Because if you believe in something other than you, another person to see it in you, and then progression start. That's how me and her built our relationship. And out of everything, this is my friend.
That's what it's about. Yeah.
So Keon, you briefly spoke about being sexually abused. Do you think that that's what may have triggered this disorder? Or do you think this was something you may have dealt with all of your life?
Well, I believe that this really kind of triggered me because I was a young kid and I didn't realize that, you know, it wasn't my fault. You know, when you take the blame for other people, it becomes a burden and a depression down on you. So it led me to fighting police officers, a couple of shootouts, you know, and till I realized that the people was gonna send me away, and they sent me away for a while, you know, and through that, I didn't have the support that I had then. So when I came home, I was crying out. I was working another good job, and I got married, and my divorce sent me back to a whole nother state.
It brought you back down.
Right.
So what age? You said you were 13 when all of this stuff started transpiring, or?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
So I was 13, and, you know, I was abducted, and I was taken into a hotel room for 2 weeks. And, you know, the things I seen and the things that happened, you know, I could talk about the event, but I did talk about the actual things that happened. It's too devastating for me, but I still remember it.
Yeah. That's, I mean, you always... But the good thing is you overcame that, though. You know what I'm saying? So
right.
That's a good thing.
We're just sitting here and talking, you know. It makes me feel more comfortable because this is the first time I'm really, really, really opening up about the sexual assault. But I did it because you make up things to cover it up and till you actually get to that wound again. And you have to sometimes pull the scab off the wound just to let it heal the proper way.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not just a way that a scab developed. It's the way it's taken care of. Mm-hmm. And so your skin could come back to its pigmentation. And well, understanding and dealing with Miss Allen, you know, she really strengthened my character. Even when she asked me, she was like, Keon, I want you to do something. I was like,
But let me tell you, so like me and Keon's relationship did not start off peaches and cream.
Where's that?
Yeah.
I had to deal with Keon calling me, cussing me out, you know, and I mean just randomly. You know, I could be anywhere in a restaurant eating it. He going in on, you know, on the phone. So, you know, I had to learn that when Keon becomes afraid of something, that's when he takes out, because he doesn't know how to verbalize. I doesn't, you know, at that time didn't know how to express, okay, I'm worried about this. You know, how can you help me, you know, kind of come down a little bit, you know, because even, you know, just recently, you know, we found out that I probably won't be working with him past the end of January because his insurance is pretty much just ending his services because they're looking at it from a dollar standpoint, of course. Mm-hmm. You know, he's been in services because he had a counselor before me. So they're looking at, oh, well, he's been in services this many plus years. So even then, when we found that out, you know, we had a little ordeal. And that's when I realized, oh, he's afraid because now he feels like I'm not going to have part of my support that has kept me, you know, from being incarcerated, has kept me out of trouble because he hasn't been in trouble. Like even with his other counselor, and, you know, I don't know the whole details, but I just know from what he's told me, he's was getting arrested still, you know, going back and forth to jail. He hasn't done any of that.
And
since he's been, you know, working with me. So, you know, me and Keon bumped head a couple times. And, you know, I had to tell him, like, look, I'm human just like you.
Right.
You can cuss. I can cuss, too. You know, we can make this work. Right. And, you know, we just and it's been working. And, you know, I tell him all the time, I'm very proud of him because he did a complete change from day one. Just meeting him, you know, and even just seeing him sitting here now, you know, he will call me just telling me he's about to bash somebody's head in, you know, just because they said something crazy to him. Like he's dealt with, you know, multiple deaths. I can't even name exactly how many deaths he's had since I started working with him, at least 7 or 8, you know, he's dealt with somebody cutting his neck, you know, trying to kill him in Southside Plaza. You know, so he's dealt with that. No retaliation, not going out here trying to kill nobody after all this stuff that's happening. And then that's just built on top of everything that's happened it's in his past, this, you know, and he still has overcome and become the person that he's become. Yeah. So, you know, I'm definitely, you know, really proud of him. And I try to tell him, you know, it took him a while to see his change. And I had to keep telling him, like, Keon, like, you're fine. You'll be fine without me. Right. Yes, I'll always be here if you need to call me, whatever. But you'll be fine because you've been doing it on your own.
Right.
You know, so.
And I was going to ask you, but you kind of touched on it. Because I know you deal with, you have different cases, different other clients that you deal with. And it's a range of different mental illnesses that you know, you deal with firsthand. Well, and we're going to get into that later too as well. But in Keon's case, what makes him so special as far as y'all can say y'all's bond and relationship and even him coming here with you today to you know what I'm saying share his story with us, like what makes him so special?
Well, number one, Keon is very intelligent, and just with talking to him, and I mean, I know y'all heard something about the little wound analogy, yeah. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So, like, he always has some type of analogy for something, or he'll say something. I'm like, dang, that was kind of deep, you know? So, you know, he's really intelligent, and he's always spoken about trying to be an advocate for people with mental illness. That's, like, one of his things. Like, you know, he wants to do, like, peer-to-peer, like, counseling, mentoring, you know? And, I mean, I feel like with everything that he's gone through, he was the best person for me. And I mean, he's articulate to, you know, so it's like, he was just the best person, you know, and just his growth is what made me want to choose him to, I've had clients that, you know, I've discharged, but yeah, it's just key on his growth. Like, I mean, when I tell you,
come
that
from
point,
far.
Yes.
But it's safe to say though, that you've learned from him as well.
Right. Yeah. For sure. Yep.
Yeah, for
sure. So, Keon, I know that Jameika is a great support system for you, but do you have anybody else, like family members, friends, that you can kind of lean on to be your rock?
Yeah, I do. I have my brother that came. Okay. You know, I have my mother. She's a minister at a church, so she always be telling me the religious side. But like I tell her, Mom, this religious thing, just let it go and get spiritual, man. Because
you got to
you still are human. So, you know, and with how she really helped me is, you know, she helped me build a relationship even stronger with my family, because when she did meet me, I was in a tough position, you know, because I went through a little altercation with my, he's supposed to have been my dad, but, you know, he spit in my face and called me a kitty cat, which you know what that means. Yeah. But, you know, and I actually tried to hurt him. I actually tried to kill him, you know, just because I feel I deserve life like everybody else just because I've been through sexual assaults. I've been through all this. I've been blaming that stuff on myself. Mm-hmm. And it led me into destruction, which was prison. You know, I've been around a lot of people, you know, like my cellie, one of them was the DC sniper, and he wasn't even a person that you would think.
Say, hold on, I'm sorry. Your cellie was the DC sniper?
Yes, sir.
Oh, wow. That's great.
Wow. You have to touch on that. What was your experience like with him being your cellie? And then just talk about that experience overall, being in jail, being incarcerated. How did that help your growth and your, you know, shape you as you are now?
It really helped me basically by showing me that I have to do something in life to be able to succeed, which I went through schooling, I went through college courses, I went through barbering school, electricity, carpentry. I got all of those degrees and with certifications, not degrees, but certifications. And, you know, with him being my cellie, it let me know that even in the rain, you can still smile.
Yes, sir.
You can still smile because, you know, where we were at Red Onion, it was cells. Mm-hmm. You know, I was in Supermax prison. So it really bothered me how we were treated because not only we were had a crime, but up there inside of the mountains, it's totally different than down low in the valley. Cause they actually spit tobacco on you, had the dogs at you, and you know, just seeing me, my cellie, and other people go through it, you know,
it's modern day slavery.
It is, and it destroy your mind.
Yeah.
And then 90 days before you come home, they try to prepare you for
to go back out.
It's by design. Yeah.
And that doesn't work. You know, it'll work because you come home and you got probation or something like that. And we're still dealing with
all the trauma.
You know,
they set you up to fail.
And I appreciate her giving me this opportunity because an authentic story wouldn't nobody know unless you really, really been there, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, I still raise my hand up to the DC sniper. I raise it up to everybody that's doing life sentences because they need an opportunity. If you actually listen to a person completely and completely listen, you can understand hurt, pain, jealousy, envy, and also if you want to connect with them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have to study that. Instead of staying one step behind, stay one step ahead. Play chess.
Yeah.
Play chess. She taught me how to play chess again.
Right. Right. Wow. Go ahead.
Do you feel like you connected with her because she actually cared? Because you said you had another, I guess, counselor before her, correct?
Yeah.
But did they show that same like compassion or that they cared about you? Or did they just felt like they were just doing their job?
I felt like that she just really
she
was,
just did her job.
She was just there. Yeah. So your previous counselor was a female?
She was a female too. Okay. And she, you know, I was in a relationship with this girl and she wasn't telling me the best interest to be with the girl. And I was getting traumatized at the girl house. I'm talking about like getting beat up by her friends. And I'm talking about like she'll leave her kids at the house with me and just go out. And that, you know, I don't mind helping out, you know, but don't take
advantage.
Don't step over that limit. You know, you step over the limit, you never know what limit the next person to take it to.
Yeah.
You know, so with developing it, you know, I really, I really appreciate how strong, you know, she see me, her colleagues, you know, because it's been a struggle. Yeah. And it still is a struggle.
Yeah. But you're putting that work in. So right. That's the main thing. As long right. as you're putting that work
I'm getting
in.
It in.
You know what I'm saying?
Getting it in.
Yes.
Yeah. Jamaica, are you seeing more mental illnesses over substance abuse in this day and age, or, you know, is it more like a half and half type thing in your experience dealing with your client?
What do you mean, like, over substance abuse? Like,
I guess just more so,
like, people just abuse
it. Do you have a lot of clients that you see that just has strictly mental disorders, or do you see more substance abuse clients?
Mostly mental disorders. I mean, you have a lot of people that self-medicate mm-hmm. in order to cope right. with whatever they have going on. I have maybe one client. Okay, I've had two. One, she's kind of overcame her substance abuse. But in the process, she contracted HIV. Wow. So, but miraculously, they haven't seen like an increase in her HIV. So, you know, okay. right now it's dormant. So it's almost like she doesn't have it.
Oh, okay. Wow. Okay.
But, you know, I have one now currently who is dealing with substance, but it's more alcohol. Nothing really like strong, like, okay. you know, serious drugs or anything like that. I mean, a lot of my clients smoke marijuana, mm-hmm. self-medicate, you know.
So then would you say it goes kind of hand in hand, substance abuse and mental disorder with the clients that you see?
No, I wouldn't say that. I think it's situational, depending on the person, depending on how they learn to cope, like especially before seeking help. 'Cause, you know, I've had a client who smoked weed like 4 or 5 blunts a day, and he doesn't smoke anymore because and then just me helping him get on medication and his medication management. So now he's taking his meds. So he's like, I don't really need to smoke, gotcha. You know, as much anymore because the medication's helping.
So do you push medication, or it depends on the client?
I push medication for adults. For kids, it depends. I'm not a fan of putting a child on medication to the point where they're a zombie or, you know, something like that. But I've had successes with kids. For example, I have a 10-year-old. No, he's 8. He's an 8-year-old. Smart little boy. But he was acting out in school. Got him on medication. His grades went up. You know, his behaviors changed in school. Still working on the stuff at home. But, you know, at least he was able to function in school, which is, I mean, you got to do. Right. You know, and I have one kid now that I'm in the process of trying to get him into a doctor to see him because he just got put out of school. He's in first grade. Mm-hmm. You're first grade, you know?
First grade.
That's probably the smallest thing in the classroom. But I think with him, it's a little bit deeper. You know, it definitely starts at home. He definitely has ADHD, but it definitely starts at home. And like his home environment is awful. You know, mom is just disconnected, doesn't focus on the kids. She has a lot of kids. You know, she's overwhelmed, just had a new baby. And
falling through the cracks.
Right. Like he can't read. You know, he can barely write. So I feel like he's in school acting out because he feels left behind. He doesn't understand what's going on in class. You know, and then with Richmond Public Schools, you know, I mean, I was a product of Richmond Public Schools, but at the end of the day, they suck right now.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just what it is. They suck.
Right. Going back to that, to medication, is there a time where you've seen where, because I know you said you more so push it with adults than your children clients, but is there ever a time when you feel like it's not really the best option? Or in your experience, medication always helps?
In my experience, honestly, medication has always helped. Okay. It just
sometimes they quickly once they diagnose it, they say, hey, you need this medicine, blah, 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 but that's not always.
Yeah. And correct. Then, I mean, it's just working with the right medical professionals as well, because you have some psychiatrists, they come in, you tell them what's wrong, they diagnose you, you know, give you a medication, it may not work. So, you know, having like, and I've actually found a psychiatrist that I like taking my clients to because she actually talks. Like she tries to find out what's going on. Like she goes beneath, you know, beneath the surface. She peels back the layers. So then she's able to prescribe medication, not just based on your diagnosis, okay, but based on, you know, everything that you're telling her.
Right.
So, because I mean, you would feel, I mean, your medication has been working, right? Yeah. I mean, she's, so it just, it really depends. Like I've had, you know, it just, it's a concoction. You know, you got to kind of play with it as far as the medications. But, you know, you have people that suffer with panic attacks over minor triggers, you know, minor irritants. And they're like on the floor, like, you know, feeling like they're going to die because of a panic attack. But it's something as simple as a medication that may help to, you know, calm them or, you know, so yeah, I mean, for adults, and like I said, most of my adults have, you have to, in order to even receive help, you have to either have major depression, schizophrenia, or bipolar disorder. If you don't have one of those three, they're not going to even approve you for services. Okay. So if you're thinking about somebody with schizophrenia, they're hearing voices, they're seeing things. There's nothing that I personally can do solely on my own to help an individual who's seeing things and hearing things that I can't see or hear.
Right.
So they have to have medication. Yeah. You right. know what I mean? So, and then even with somebody that has bipolar disorder, that's when you have your highs and your lows. They have their major depression. Then they have their manic where it's like, everything's like great. You know, I'm on top of the world. Mm-hmm. But then you got this deep low. Even I can teach you coping skills. I can talk to you about different things, techniques, and give you that support. But at the same time, that's a, you know, chemical imbalance within your brain. I can't fix that, you know. Right. So that's why I said medication definitely for adults, for me, especially with somebody with a major illness like that, is definitely important. And then you have people out here not on their meds and they're doing the craziest things.
Yeah.
You know, that's what Keon kind of touched on, you know, seeing stuff in the news with all these mass shootings and things like that. You know, it's so many people out here that are just afraid to ask for help, especially in the Black community. And I might be, you know, jumping ahead, but just in the Black community. And, you know, this is just because of the stereotype that people are going to label them as crazy. Mm. You know, you have some parents, I've had parents that say, oh, well, I don't want to, you know, go get my child, get a psychological done, because then if they find out that something's wrong with them, they're going to be crazy for the rest of their lives. They're not going to be able to work. They're not going to be able. You have people that can work and still have these illnesses, you know?
Yeah.
So it's just it's definitely a huge stereotype, especially so, with us.
Yeah,
go ahead. I was going to say, because a lot of times I just feel like those kids just need, some of them may need medication, but a lot of them just need somebody to show them that they care.
A structure, you know, right? Some structure.
Going to teach them, like how you saying the mm-hmm. one of your patients were with the kid, and his mom has all these kids. It's like, you know, he's falling through the cracks, and it's sad because it's like, he's reaching, he needs attention, but mm-hmm. it's a kid, so it's like a kid's not gonna, can only save us so much. Like, mom, what about me, you know what right. I'm saying? So that's how I kind of like with you, with Keon, it's like, I feel like do you just, it's like, because you're not getting what you need, that's why you lash out. That's why you, it was that like with you, like, is that why you, like, you kind of like lashed out, because you needed somebody to help you, to be there with you, and you weren't getting that?
That's basically like what it was. It's, you know, when you feel alone,
you just like, the hell with it.
You're back against the wall.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So when you're back against the wall, you know, whatever choice you got to make, you got to make at that time. And sometimes it may be survival, you know, but love is very important. Just to have somebody to even talk to, it's just to open up to, and they just listen. You don't have to say nothing. You could just sit there and listen and just be like, because it's not just listening. It's an energy that's pushed up.
Mm-hmm. So, and I like to use the term mental wellness. I don't really want to put the mental illness on there, but with mental wellness, the awareness of it rising, I would say in recent years, people speaking more publicly about it. It's more of a conversational piece. How, and this is an open-ended question to, you know, both of you, how should us as a community address that, as far as, like I said, it being more spoken about, you know, in an open setting. People are not scared to talk about it anymore. People are coming out with their, you know, the different things that they suffer from. How should us as a community address that moving forward, you think?
I would say that we need to find ourselves and then go back to the youth.
Mm.
You know,
because that's where it starts.
Because the kids suffering because we don't care about ourselves. So,
so true.
We could use mental wellness, we could use delusional, we could use whatever, but until you actually find yourself, then you're able to transfer a message to somebody that really need it.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. And in the community, that's what we need, you know, especially as our people. You know, we already seen the old part, which roots and all that. Mm. We got to move past roots, and we got to start developing plants, because we have to plant again.
I like that. Mm. Say that one more time, yeah, fellas. Please say that one more time.
We have to. You know, we have to lead the roots. You know, and plant plants. You know, we need plants. We need plants to grow. We need to see the blossoming and understand that the light and water is important. Understand that little things are important. You know, that's what she taught me. Mm. She taught me not the big things. Conquer the little things, and then you'll see the big things.
She planted that seed in you, and you the plant, and now you the grown. So you want to distribute that to another child.
You got it.
You know what I'm saying?
Rose that grew through concrete.
I got you.
So it's another opening question to both of you. Whoever wants to chime in, but I would love to hear both of your perspectives on it. Why do you think there is a negative stigma in the Black community when it comes to mental wellness? Like, as far as it was years that we didn't discuss it. You know, it was always hidden, you know, swept under the rug. Nobody wanted to talk about it. Nobody wanted to address it. Even if it was brought up, you know, I know at times, like, you know, it's almost like it would be dismissed. You know what I'm saying? Why do you think that is when it comes to us as African Americans? Why are we quick to dismiss it?
Well, I know, I mean, I can't speak personally, but, you know, it's embarrassing, you know, because you look at somebody and they have a mental illness, and number one, we don't understand it. So, you know, your family doesn't understand exactly what's going on. Why are you acting this way? Why do you have this, that, and the third? So number one, they don't understand it, so they don't even know how to deal with it. So that's why it's like, oh, well, we're just going to sweep this under the rug because I don't understand what's going on. Right. And so then it makes it, you know, that stigma, oh, well, you know, you're just crazy. Mm-hmm. So right. Then you're like, oh, shoot, I'm crazy, but I don't want to ask nobody for help. Mm-hmm. So then you're walking around being quote unquote crazy
right.
when there's so many options for support out here. And no, it's not easy for Black people, honestly. Because if you don't have, like for me personally, like, well, not personally, but for just my field, if you don't have Medicaid, I can't even work with you. So imagine somebody who doesn't have that insurance, then they're paying out of pocket. Right. They're paying out of pocket. So, of course, you're not going to be able to afford to go to the doctor, to go to the psychiatrist, to go get your medications, to do everything that you need to do in order to deal with these illnesses, because that support's not there for us. You know, white people or other races, they may have a little bit more money, you know, or be more well off or be able to have those jobs, to have the insurance, the great insurance, to be able to get, you know, help for their family members. But we might not have that. And then, like I said, just not understanding, you know, just automatically saying, oh, this is wrong with you. You're crazy.
Right.
You know, it's just like that, you know, using the word retarded. You know, right. people stop using that word
right.
because just because somebody might not be on an academic level like right. this person doesn't mean that they're retarded. Yeah. You know, so just because you have a mental illness doesn't mean that you're crazy.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's the biggest thing with the Black community. It's just they don't want to be labeled as crazy.
Right.
I think that too. But then the trust, I think we as Black people, we have a long history with not being able to trust
right,
your psychiatrist, your psychologist, those people who are in those medical professions that may not necessarily look like us.
Right. And it's like I was just about to say, it's unfortunate. I have not seen one black psychiatrist. Most of them are, you know, Indian or Caucasian. I haven't found one black one that I could really just be like, yes, I'm taking all of my clients, you know.
Yeah.
But,
maybe, excuse me. Like, maybe with understanding, that's why I'm working so hard. And which Alan gave me, you know, the inspiration. I've been wanting to help the community, but I feel that even tonight as I'm speaking, that I can do it. I don't need no money. I don't need nothing. I'm just going to step out and just let people know that it's all right.
You're doing that right now.
It's all right.
You're doing it right now.
It's all right, you know, because, you know, once you start to believe in something other than you, it give you a different perspective. And then when you see love coming from the other end, when you're doing, you may not feel that you're doing what's right, but it's an elevation for somebody else, because it's not about me. But it's about bettering my community. Yeah. You know, and my community that I stand behind is the people, and then the people that suffer with behavior issues, you know, and I don't want to see all this violence that's going on and all that. And all you really need to do is just touch a heart. Mm-hmm. If you can touch a heart, you can spark a flame. And if you can spark a flame, you can capture the brain.
Hey.
Snap.
Bars.
Snaps on that. Yeah, you know what I'm saying? Oh, you coming, man, with the quotables, my brother.
You coming with the quotables. A lot of quotables.
For sure. I like your mind frame. I like what, not only the way you think, but what comes out. You know what I'm saying? So you definitely have a gift with just, you know, speaking. And I can definitely see you speaking publicly more about this. You know what I'm saying? Sir, so I'm glad you decided to come and, you know, sit with us today, as well as, you know, Miss Allen over here.
Yeah, that's my high five.
And, you know, I was just going to say, because my ADD will kick in and I'll forget. You know, and then even with this, with just reaching out and just having that support, it's kind of like people that go to AA meetings. They go get their chips in order to show other people in the group that it works, you know, the program works. So when you have somebody that's doing what they're supposed to be doing, they're not out here running wild just because they're blaming it on a mental illness. Mm-hmm. That should show the next person, okay, well, if I do this, it works, you know? So, and I feel like that's what we need a lot more of too, so that we can see that it works. It works. You definitely have to want it for yourself, but it works.
Yeah.
You know?
Let me ask you, in your field, in your profession, you say you've been doing it for how long?
4 years.
4 years. Does it take a toll on you as far as
definitely
your mental health, your physical health?
Like, yes.
Speak a little bit more about that.
That's why I'm always gone. Self-care is important. Yeah. I mean, in anybody's life, self-care is important. But yes, because, I mean, I'm on call 24 hours a day, technically. If my phone rings and there's a crisis, I need to be available. You have people, well, me personally, because everything I do, I put my heart into it, especially when I'm working with a human being, you know? So, of course, me being emotional and just being that cancer type of person.
Cancering.
Yes. But, you know, I'm always going to take a bit and piece of something from somebody, you know, that I work with. And then when there's a crisis, or when I feel like, for me mostly, when I feel like I'm not doing what I need to do for my client, like if I feel like if they're not satisfied, or if I haven't stepped up and done something, you know, to their liking or right away, or, you know, that puts a toll on me. And, you know, it doesn't happen often. I mean, I'm human. I got 10 clients. So, you know, and everybody's situation is different. But at the same time, yeah, self-care, definitely. That's why I'm always on a vacation or doing something. Because when I'm home, I'm home. And it's like, you know, and I even notice, like, when I go away, I mean, the day that I come back, my phone is blowing up. No. Oh, you're back? You're back? You know? Yeah. And so I have to be prepared for it.
Right.
But it does, because you're dealing with everybody's situation. I'm dealing with Keon's situation. I got this client over here. I'm dealing with that situation. This client over here, they don't have any food in the house. So I got to figure out how to get them some food, you know, so that they can feed the baby, or the baby don't have any formula. Then this person over here, they can't pay their rent. This person over here, their lights are cut off. You know, so it's like everything is just like,
yeah,
me. Because a lot of these people don't have that support. Yeah.
Right. So do you go to therapy?
I do not go to therapy. My vacations are my self-therapy. I don't feel like I've gotten to that point. And I think just having, you know, close friends and family that I could talk to, just even if it's just a matter of, man, I'm tired, like I'm mentally drained, you know. And for me, more so within this field, it's not even working with the clients. It's the paperwork. It puts a mental toll on me, like having to do paperwork all the time.
Every time I talk to you, doing notes.
Yeah, like, and that's the, or reports, or doing something. So, you know, that's the biggest thing. If they can figure out a way to make that go away,
right,
or not be so intensive, then this job would be 1,000 times easier. Yeah. And I feel like that's what happens with a lot of counselors. They get burnt out, because you can get burnt out really quick. Mm-hmm. Like very quickly, and then they see dollars, because you can make very good money in this field. So it's just a matter of, oh, I just need to show up. Let me just go talk to them, write this note, boom, I'm paid. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So if they're not putting in the work to actually try to help that individual and help them change, then they're just there for a dollar. And I mean, it's very easy to do. Or it's very easy to just be fraudulent and just write a note, and you haven't even seen the person. Mm-hmm. You know, you talk to them on the phone. Oh, you good? Oh, all right. Cool, because you will have some clients that aren't needy, that don't need that much. So they can fall through the crack, because you're like, well, shoot, I ain't got to go see them today, because they all right. Let me just go and write this note up. Boom, I'm paid. You know what I'm saying? So you have to really have a heart in order to do this, because like I said, you can get burnt out very quickly. And I will say, I get burnt out very quickly. I know, you know, I've been doing it for 4 years. I was telling Ace the other day, like, I want to go back to school, because I want to be that psychiatrist that my people can bring their clients to. You know what I'm saying? And be able to speak to them on a level of, oh, is the medication working? Oh, it's good. All right, let me just go ahead and renew this, right, you know, refill this for another month and a half. I see you in 6 weeks. No, like, we need more than that. Yeah. You know, so.
What's your, if you can go into detail without really mentioning names or anything like that, describe an intense time with a client or a situation that happened that you remember, as far as like being, you know, something that was like really intense, or that you was on site for, or you had to get called about.
I thank God, clap it up, that I haven't had anything super extreme happen. Mm-hmm. I have had to call crisis on one of my clients' siblings. Wasn't even my client, because he was like fighting his sisters, going crazy. So that was actually the first time that I've ever had to call crisis and actually have the ambulance come and pick him up and take him to the hospital so that they could, you know, keep him overnight. I've had clients. Yeah, I haven't had like an extreme situation, and I thank God for that. You know, and then also too, I think what it is, I always work to build rapport with my clients first, when I first meet them. That's what I'm working on. You know, I've had clients that I've said, okay, I can't work with you. And it's not because I don't want to help you, but we're just not going to be a good fit. Like, either you're trying to abuse and misuse my job, or you just don't want it. You just want somebody to be able to, oh, well, I need a doctor's appointment. I got to go to the doctor. Can you take me? Or that type of thing. You know, you have no intentions of really trying to help yourself. Right. Mm-hmm. So, and like I was telling him earlier today, the same way that he has a right to say, I don't want to work with you, I have the right to say, I can't work with you, you know, and just move on from there. So I think with that, and just kind of building that rapport, my clients understand, like, unless it's something like super serious, they don't call me. Mm. So I don't have, you know, those late night phone calls. Like, I've heard from other counselors where they had like one particular counselor, she had one of her kids was throwing knives like down the stairs, and the mom called her. And so she calls me and I'm like, tell her to call the police. Like, what the heck you going to do? Go up in the house and get stabbed, you know, because the kid throwing a knife? No, call the police. Right. And when the police get there, then you can show up or you can be there. But don't put yourself in danger just because this kid is, you know, obviously in a crisis situation. Right. But I mean, it can get that extreme.
Right.
You know, it can definitely get that extreme. But I haven't had like anything to the max where I'm just like, oh, my God, like, what am I going to do? Like, I'm always able to kind of figure out a situation. It might take some time.
Yeah.
I might be up past midnight on a school night for some of my kids, but it gets done.
It gets done.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Keon, what, and, you know, because I know you've spoken earlier when you say you have certain periods or certain spells where, you know, things upset you. How do you get through those times, those episodes, or those, you know, those times where you, you know, you lose your cool? What has been able to bring you back down to get out of that state? What's the one thing that, or, you know, multiple things that back in hindsight that helps you?
Yeah. Well, first I look at my freedom. That's the most important
thing.
That's
very important.
Right. You know, that's that I look back at my freedom, and then I think about my kids. You know, I got grown kids, and I got one little kid. And
How many kids though?
I got three.
Three. Okay.
Yeah, I have two girls. One 20, just turned 25. One 18. I mean, 19, and my son 11.
Okay.
So you know, and then I look at the support system that I have. The support system that I have is very important, because not only I'm hurting myself, I'm hurting them. I let them down. So,
yeah,
you know, when you find you got a heart somewhere in your body, it just show you that you have to have compassion for others. Even like when she was working with her, you know, I always tell her, I'd be like, I'm good. I don't need this. I'm good. I'm good. I'm good. But, you know, if I really need her, she there. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm talking about, like, on Mr. Clean there.
Show you that empathy.
Yeah. You know, like, you know, she got a good heart with what she do, you know, and she inspired me more just to reach out to the community, which need people to be honest.
Yeah.
You need the community, need people to be honest. It ain't nothing more to that, you know. It ain't no more to that, you know. And she taught me how to be honest with myself, be on schedule with my bills, you know, and, you know, just let me know I'm a good parent, you know. That's, you know, just seeing people smile really, really open my heart up to life. Cause being sad, what good is it? You know, it's only a moment of time before it passes.
But it's okay to be sad though.
It is.
I know that. It's okay as well. Everybody can have spells, but it's okay to come up on the other side of that spell.
But see, it's always grow from it. Mm-hmm. If you don't grow from it, you can go back to it.
Yeah.
Right.
There's definitely a difference between being sad and depressed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everybody goes through sadness. You have some type of sadness in life, but it's when it gets beyond that, and when you can say it's a depression where you can't pull yourself out of without support, is when the help needs to be, you know, put in place. So, and like, you know, I tell him, excuse me, all the time, it's like you said, it's okay. Yeah. Like, you know, he'll deal with somebody saying something to him that'll kind of like trigger him. And I'm just like, it's okay. It's okay for you to cut people out of your life that you don't feel are there to support you. It's okay for you to not want to deal with people's foolishness. Mm-hmm. Like, just because you have a mental illness doesn't mean that you should have to subject yourself to people being rude or cruel to to you, you know, that's anybody. You know, nobody should have to deal. I mean, unless you're a doormat and want to be walked over, but, which he's not.
But like in the senses of dealing with mental health, me speaking for the people with mental health is our hearts become softer toward people because we're in a vulnerable stage. Mm-hmm. And we're being in a vulnerable stage. Sometimes we accept anything, you know, and with accepting anything, you looking for failure,
yeah.
You know, and failure, yeah, and failure for a person with suffering with mental health, it just take you even deeper because a no hurt even more than a yes. Mm-hmm. Like a no, if I say, can I go to the bathroom, which I used to say inside of prison. Can I go to the bathroom? I gotta ask you that first. I'm dealing with that. Then you tell me, no, you can't go right now. We doing a count. And you know, it's a loss of dignity and pride. Mm-hmm. You know, when you lose your pride and your understanding of life, it's devastating. It's really devastating because there's nothing that you can do to pull yourself out of it, but to actually reach out and say, look, I need help. Mm-hmm. I'm in a crisis. It's been several times, you know, I've tried to commit suicide and it failed, but through it all, I just look at where I'm at today and I'm just thankful because the opportunity is golden. It's what you do with the opportunity.
Yeah. And you got a purpose, King. Remember
yes,
that,
sir.
All right? You know what I'm saying? You got a purpose, my dog. So don't ever fall down there, all right?
Definitely.
Salute.
Definitely. And for our viewers listening and watching, what's one thing that you want them to take away from your story? What's the message that you have for people that you want to help in the future that you want them to get from you?
The message that I really have is be honest. If you're honest, you could accept anything that comes. You hope for the best and be prepared for the worst.
Mm.
You know, if you're honest with yourself, you can understand that adversity is a part of life. It's how you take the adversity and advance from it. You know, I looked at growing up, you know, I had no father, so I looked at Tupac as a father, and he showed me one thing about life. When they say a rose can't come through concrete,
mm-hmm.
20 years later after he died, you made a movie about him and called him a living legend, and he was real.
He was real. The realest at 25 when he went. Yeah. You know what I'm saying?
September the 13th. Mm-hmm. Friday the 13th.
Mm-hmm.
I remember I was going up to Maryland on Friday the 13th. Tupac Shakur was pronounced dead.
Mm-hmm. I remember that too. I punched a hole in the wall. I was a kid. I was mad. Yeah.
I cried.
I punched a hole in the wall, man. That's one of those days that you just don't forget. But yeah. Man, I really think that you, you know, outside of your story and you sharing that with us, and I'm glad that you came on here and was honest, like you said, and was had the courage enough to come on here and tell us your story, man. I really see you doing big things, and more so in a public speaking platform because you got it. You know what I'm saying? Like I said, you got the mind for it, and just the way that you verbalize and communicate, man, I definitely want to see you, you know, doing that more. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
so
yes, sir.
Definitely. I appreciate you coming, man.
Thank you so much.
Jamaica, where can our viewers that's, you know, listening and watching that may need your services, where can they reach out to you, the company that you work for? Give us that information. And
Well, I work for two different companies, but I'll name one.
Okay, you'll drop one.
Okay. My favorite one.
Okay.
Which is Urban Learning Leadership and Family Services. It's abbreviated ULLC. So even if you punched in U-LLC on Google, it'll pop up.
Okay. Give that name one more time.
Urban Learning and Leadership Family Services.
Okay.
And it's U-LLC.
U-LLC.
Mm-hmm. Me personally, I mean, I'll go ahead and put my work number out there because that's what it's for. So, I mean, if you are somebody who is suffering and you don't know, like, your next step or where to go or how to, you know, who to turn to, you can definitely give me a call. My number is 804-387-0228. Again, that number is 804-387-0228. If I don't answer, leave a message. You know, and don't ever feel like you have to suffer in silence. You know, because there's so many people out here just going through a lot of things, you know, especially with suicides. And, you know, I forgot all about, you know, Keon, because I see the bright him now. So, you know, yeah. Some of those darker things I actually forget about. You know, yeah. And it's like, you know, there's so many people out here suffering and feeling like they don't have anybody. And you can have somebody. You just got to speak about it. You got to open your mouth and you got to ask for help. You know, never be ashamed to ask for help. Or, you know, even if people stigmatize you or you feel like people are going to look down on you, don't be afraid to just ask for help. Yeah. Like, life is worth living, and it can be done in a positive way on a daily basis. You just got to put the work in, you know, so.
Okay. Got to put that work in, man.
Yeah, got to put the work in.
Appreciate y'all joining us. This was a real conversation, a much needed conversation.
You,
I definitely learned a lot. And I appreciate y'all coming to our platform and having this conversation with us. Hopefully, y'all relationship continue past the working relationship. I know you said that was, you know, that might be coming to an end, but I don't see it going nowhere. You know what I'm saying?
I told him I'm here for him.
Definitely. So. Definitely.
And I believe also I see that y'all here for me. You know, it's
always. Oh, yeah, most definitely.
That's, that put a smile on my face, you know, with just sitting here and being able to express and open myself up. I see and I'm looking at different faces. I don't know most of from a can of paint.
Yeah.
but I felt that it was needed to be open and honest. And I really appreciate you giving me the chance to be able to be open and honest and talk about not only my issues, but the issues that people suffer, which is kids, my brothers and sisters. We all, even down to the president, you know. Yeah. So
we all, you know, we all. Everybody at this table suffered with something, you know what I'm saying? Whether we vocalize it or not, but. You know, the point is, like you said, to be honest and put that out there and talk.
And take your medications.
Take your medications. Please make sure you take your medications.
Take them.
But y'all, I thank y'all again for joining us. This has been another episode of the panel interviews with Miss Jameika Allen, Mr. Keon Hill. Appreciate y'all. We are the top and we out.
Truly opinionated, we do it for the culture. A group of minds came and combined to put some thoughts in order. A platform is all we need to be so filterless. Say what's on your mind, put it all in line. Your own perspective, living legends all in one room. It be so effortless, build it up like it's Tetris. Come with knowledge, so let us in. We doing it straight from the soul. That's how we feeling it, killing in every category. This would be the testimony. A lot of truth, which is as many opinions. So prolific a vision, you won't forget it. We over top of the gimmicks, the side of something new. This for our city ain't stopping until we reach our pinnacle. We got a lot to do, been breaking through, you know what we on. All gas, no brakes, what it takes. Let's set the stage to be great. This is the top for the day. You will see nothing better, beginning of something special. We reaching another level, we pushing forward together. Everybody got ambitions, you know. We on the rise with the top, yeah, you know. Yeah, you know, I said what? Everybody got ambitions, you know. We on the rise with the top, yeah, you know. Yeah, you know, yeah, you know. Everybody got ambitions, you know. We on the rise with the top, yeah, you know. Yeah, you know, I say what? Everybody got ambitions, you know. We on the rise with the top, yeah, you know. Yeah, you know, truly opinionated.